back.
It's been some time.
I'm going to do another catch-up video. I know. These days, that's kind of what we do, is catch up.
Exactly. Well, what do we want to talk about?
Let's catch up. Let's talk about your class. Andre's a teacher now.
Yes. Yeah, I'm a little, I feel like I'm hungover today.
From teaching?
Yeah, yeah.
Last class was last night.
Last class was yesterday, so I was frantically preparing for class. Even though I didn't really have a lot of lecture yesterday, it was all the students, you know, showing their final prints. So
what are you teaching?
Let me back up. Yes. This quarter, this was a 10-week class at Photographic Center Northwest. And this is the first time I was teaching a class on alternative processes, specifically digital negative making. So for those that are not quite sure exactly what a digital negative is, my definition is not the digital negative format, the DNG format that right. You might see shooting with a digital camera, and that shows up in Lightroom as a digital file. It's, you know, if you imagine let's say an 8x10 negative or a 4x5 negative or even a 35mm negative that you're looking at, it's basically making a negative with inkjet transparency paper. And so you can then take that negative and you can make prints with it. So generally you contact print it. So you put the negative on top of some printing paper, let's say black and white darkroom paper, or what our primary focus in the class was exploring alternative processes. So we were learning about cyanotype and Van Dyke was our two. We actually also did silver prints in the darkroom as well. So the class was, you know, it was a lot of preparation for me because I wouldn't call myself an expert in that area yet.
But we do. We call you an expert.
Yes, we do.
I don't feel like it. Sometimes I have imposter syndrome. But there was a lot of preparation that had to go into it, and preparation on the digital negative making side. So everything you need, the software on your computer, the workflow, printing things out on a printer. And then there was a bunch of preparation I had to make sure all of that stuff was working, that workflow was working correctly to make a good end print for the silver darkroom, and then had to ramp up again and make sure everything was working correctly for cyanotype, and then I had to do it again for Van Dyke. So it was a lot of work. And what I didn't anticipate was, you know, I do most of my work kind of in my own darkroom and studio space, and usually I'd get things working pretty well there. And one of the things I had to do was, since the Photographic Center has a certain version of Epson's printers, you have to, when you make it's called a curve. You basically make a profile for the printer and the process that you're using, so that you can make the digital negative correctly. And I had a bunch of problems there. Basically, when I got out of my studio space into a different, you know, studio space, I encountered random problems that I never anticipated. And I had
the printer was different at Photo Center, so it had a different set of inks, and so the mm-hmm. files wouldn't work on that he created at home, wouldn't work at Photo Center, which I also experienced when he gave me, but I took the class curved. But I was doing the work at home, and my printer wouldn't work with the one he created for the printer at school.
So it was just the case that it was a different printer. There wasn't like other problems with like the network or the setup or,
you know. Oh, there were problems.
Well, there were problems.
There were, so it was an addition.
A lot of technical difficulties yeah. with the printer.
And, you know, one of the reasons I kind of, you know, volunteered to teach the class was I had taught myself some years ago how to use Quadtone Rip, which is one of the software packages that
sounds like an energy drink.
Yes.
You'll need one.
Yeah. So, you know, I learned that method and it was successful for me and more straightforward than another method where you basically make a curve, you know, like within Photoshop, and you kind of have to round trip a number of times to before you get to that point with Photoshop curves. And so I thought, okay, well, let me see if I can, you know, put something together such that this kind of methodology, which I would, you know, generally is among the, you know, serious alternative process makers that are making digital negatives, nearly all of them are using Quad Tone Rip at this point. So it was something that I wanted to see Photo Center adopt. And there weren't any other instructors there that knew that. And in fact, I think for most of the alt processes programs right now, given the availability of certain instructors, they tend to just kind of hand the class a curve to start with, which I could have done. I could have given the class, let's say, a cyanotype curve. I did. Actually, I did create a class curve. I wanted them to learn also how to be able to create their own curves. And that's the hidden complexity in the process. In many cases, these alt processes can be very simple. The cyanotype chemistry, for example, it's super simple to mix. You know, it's been around for 100 years. It's almost, when you're using just the classic formula, it's almost indestructible in terms of you almost can't make any mistakes.
As long as you have a good brush.
Yeah, brush is a big one for sure. So in any event, when most people take, let's say, a workshop for alternative processes, the instructor will, let's say 90% of the time, they'll just give them a curve. You install that usually in Photoshop. And on top of that, the instructor will often do the digital printing for the students. Mm. So ahead of the workshop, they'll send out a note and say, hey, you know, give me some files, give me a couple images that you would like to print. And then the instructor does the printing. So I didn't, you know, obviously Photo Center had been teaching this class in kind of two 10-week parts in the past. The first 10 weeks, you learned how to make the curve yourself. And then the second 10 weeks, you learned how to, you know, play with some different alt processes. So we decided to collapse those into one class. So, you know, it was a brand new class. So I really didn't, aside from having some experience going through that workflow or those classes at Photo Center myself, I mean, I had to kind of invent everything. So it was a huge amount of work because I had to fill in a lot of knowledge gaps that I had.
And you know, also you had to add Boutwell software. I mean, you didn't have to, but you added Boutwell software in there. So Richard Boutwell makes a program called QTRDN. Mm-hmm. And it's a linearization program. So it takes your curve after you measure the values of your curve, and it will linearize it to basically help you fix it so you kind of beat it in place. So there's two software packages that are both complex, and Andre had learned both of them.
Yeah. I mean, I knew them enough as a user to be productive, but you know, to teach a class, you have to really get into it in depth because you have to be able to answer questions
around it. Fix things.
Yeah, so it was
challenging.
It was a tough quarter, but it was nice. Yesterday we had a final presentation, so people had their assignment was to print 5 to 7 images in whatever process they preferred, and it was really cool to see everybody's work. Some people really did a lot of work.
Wow. So were they printing to their own curves or like a mix of curves that you had given and some that they had made?
Generally, it was their own curves. What ended up happening was the first, you know, there were three units. The first unit was learn how to make a curve in the Silver Darkroom. And the idea was most people should be proficient in the dark room already, so there's no learning curve there. And you're not dealing with like coding paper. You're kind of taking coding out of the equation, which can impact your curve making. So we spent, the first portion of the class doing that. But what was unexpected was that, you know, there were some folks in the class that hadn't printed in the darkroom for a while. I also asked students to primarily use the Saunders enlargers, which is in PhotoCenter's in darkroom too. So I think there were a bunch of people that also weren't familiar with that enlarger. It's a color head enlarger. You know, whoever was on it did not have any background.
It shocked me how some of my fellow students didn't remember how to work in the color darkroom.
Had they ever?
Well, yeah. I mean, some of them were like what I would consider like top level people in the past, but just 10 years away from the darkroom. Yeah. And they're like, where does the filter go? How do I turn this thing on?
Yeah.
How do I make it go up and down? You know? And so it was just like, I think PhotoCenter thought, oh, everybody can print in the silver darkroom, so it'll be easy. And everybody will run in the black and white, and they'll be doing all this stuff. And that was like two or three classes of, you know, mayhem trying to get this because... Yeah. They're also learning how to create the curve at the same time. And it's challenging the relationship between those pieces of software that you're trying to get to, you know, function for you. And
So can you walk me through it? Because I don't know how to do this. You're talking about doing it in the silver dark room. So I'm picturing people under the red light. But then where's the computer? What's that? How does that process go from... How do you get to the software from there or vice versa?
Well, think of it this way is, you're primarily a color printer.
Mm-hmm.
So when you go into the color darkroom, you put a negative in the negative carrier, and then you expose that image onto whatever size paper you want. So you're working on an enlarger, so you're enlarging the image generally. So let's say you're enlarging it to an 8x10 print. So basically, it's that negative, that transparency, you are printing with an inkjet printer, right? So that happens on the computer and in a different room. And once
you do that first.
You do that first, correct.
So you create a negative to bring into the dark room.
No curve.
And the curve is what you use to create the negative.
Okay, so the curve is before.
The curve is basically, you create the curve and you're telling the printer, hey, make this negative so it will print a cyanotype or a Van Dyke print.
I got it.
Or a silver print. So every curve is basically a set of information telling the printer to lay down inks in a certain way so that you can go in. And you're contact printing all this stuff, so thankfully you're not playing with moving the enlarger up and down.
So you have to go into the... So from a very high level, once you have your negative printed from the inkjet, you take that negative, you put it, and that negative, if you want to make an 8x10, it has to be an 8x10 transparency. So that is put on top of your silver paper, and you put it in a contact printing frame, and then you use the enlarger light to expose it.
Okay.
So people are making contact prints, and that's another thing that most people don't really, aside from making a contact print of your negatives, most people are not contact printing these days. They want to enlarge it because they're, you know, shooting roll film or something like that. The contact print would just be too small.
Okay.
There's, in terms of being able to make your curve, a custom curve, there's a round tripping process where you start with, just call it a starter curve, and you expose that, and then you take some measurements, some optical, you basically do these readings of a step wedge. And then those readings get fed back into some software that helps develop the curve or the profile for the process that you're doing. So, I mean, we're kind of in some ways, and this is kind of an ignorance is bliss sort of thing. We're completely spoiled in kind of the traditional black and white and color darkroom workflows, because there's a certain amount of standardization that has happened in the industry. So, you know, Kodak, when they're making the negative films, they make the negative films to a certain responsiveness, right? You know, whether it's a 100 ASA or 200 or 400 ASA, and there's just all of the technology to make that negative has been kind of standardized. And then whoever is making paper, that could be Fuji or it could be Ilford, they also have standardized their papers to accept what is being projected on those papers from an enlarger. So it's like think of it as the profiling has been done by Kodak, Ilford, Fuji. They've done all that profiling stuff so that we, as you know, printmakers and photographers, we just go in, we just use the materials. And as long as we know the workflow of how to make the image with the enlarger and what chemistry baths it needs to go through or whatever, we can be completely ignorant of how the emulsion of the silver paper or the color paper is made. Like, color is the reason why there isn't like lots of color films out there, because it's extremely complicating. It's kind of the chemistry and kind of the engineering to make those color negatives. There's like multiple layers of colors and the paper emulsions and stuff. It's really complicating.
So, color photography is amazing that it happened.
Yeah. It's kind of as sophisticated as, you know, like a digital sensor, you know, that we see today. But in any event, what we're doing in these alt processes, so these very old school platinum, palladium, you know, Van Dyke, cyanotype, we are the printmakers, us, we are the makers of the paper with the emulsion. We are painting an emulsion on it. And then we have this file that's been digitized, and we have to, the computer knows how to look at the file and project it on a monitor, but it doesn't understand how much, like when it goes to, when that file gets transmitted to an inkjet printer, it, you know, let's say the program Photoshop, it doesn't know how much ink to lay down, so that if you have something in zone 5, which is like a middle gray, that it shows middle gray equivalent on your cyanotype print. So we are making a custom curve. We are doing the engineering ourselves. And so, you know, the workflow, it's not, I wouldn't, you know, you tell me whether you agree with this or not. I don't find it, it's not like a rocket science sort of workflow. But everything that goes into the digital world, I find there, it doesn't, it's for example, when any of us are messing with our phone or a digital camera and you're going through all those menus, it's not a human way of working. No. Really, right? I mean, when we're in the dark room and we, you know, our print is too light, we turn our time from, let's say, 30 seconds to 35 seconds, so the print will be a little darker. There's this there's physics, there's like the physical world is surrounding us as we're making. As soon as, you know, you get into the digital world, everything is just in this abstract world.
You have to learn like all these different formal languages to and understand what they mean in order to turn the settings.
But the software interpolates that stuff for you. So when you're using Boutwell software, for instance, it's like you're taking a reading from the print that you made of a step wedge, 21 steps, and you read those values. And so I was using a spider tool that would actually, you know, just be clicking on the print, you know, 21 times, and it would record what it measured. And then I put it in Boutwell software, and his software would read all those values in, and it would say like, well, you actually want this curve to do this. And his curve is telling, saying, here's yellow ink, here's this ink, here's these inks you need to make this work better. And so you'd go through these passes of linearization, lin 1, lin 2, or whatever. And then from that, you put it back into QTR and print it. And then you have your negative. And so initially, it's very abstract and very strange.
Yeah.
But what was interesting was that after you go through it, and, you know, like as much as I was cursing Silver at the beginning, it was just like, have you go through it a few times? And then you go into cyanotype and you start to seeing the differences. And the very last class, everybody was like, I know, you know, it's like, because you have the knowledge now, you understand not fully what it's doing, but you have an idea of what's happening, what you're measuring, how the software is interpolating that to give you a better result. And, you know, everybody was pretty excited at the end. They're like, I know how to make a curve. And I was like, yeah, we all know how to make a curve. But the other thing that was interesting was that there were some people, and I was one of them, in the middle of the class, you know, say 5 or 6 weeks in, and we were like, what is happening? Because we have the data we've measured, and yet we're still getting something that's too light or too dark. And, you know, we were all going like, but this is supposed to be data-driven, right? Because we have that in our head from tech, right? It's supposed to just output perfectly. And then, you know, I was making a print, and I'm like, oh, because the computer doesn't have any idea what the negative file that I scanned or came from my digital camera, it doesn't know what that did. It doesn't know if I blew out the highlights or if I, you know, my shadows were too thin or something like that. So, you know, I have to basically also eyeball it and adjust, make a second pass maybe. And that's where, you know, and then I was like, oh, because it doesn't know. We think it knows. It knows the baseline, but it doesn't know your specific file. And so those were kind of interesting moments in the class, and people are like, oh God, oh yeah, that's what we're missing. So there's these steps along the way where we thought we got it, and then it was like, no, you really didn't get it, and then you got it. And then by the end, I think people felt confident that they were all, everybody was expressing that at the end. And I was surprised and happy to hear that everybody was kind of psyched. Now we know how to go step through this process and make our own curve.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, my hope at the beginning of class was that we would have gotten to that point like after week four, maybe. and it just didn't work out that way, because it really took weeks. It took, you know, several weeks just to get software running on people's computers and getting them acquainted back into the dark room.
So they were bringing their own computers.
Most did. There were a few people that used PhotoCenters.
For the QTR Botwell thing, it's Mac only. So we had a couple of Windows users in there.
I mean, that's what I was wondering is after the class, how feasible is it for them to go and continue the process on their own? Let's say they're making a cyanotype. They don't need to be at PCNW for that.
No, they all have it installed in their computer.
There's several that we're working from home. You know, in fact, I got to give credit, you know, to several folks in class, built their own UV exposure units.
Wow.
That was not part of the class at all. I don't know how to do that. I bought mine. That was impressive. So I think that, you know, those that had workspaces in their home definitely wanted to continue working there as opposed to.
So I worked at home.
Yeah, coming in the whole time into PhotoCenter.
Because I do Silver at home. Though once I started doing cyanotype in Van Dyke, I was like, man, I'm never going back to Silver. It's so much more pleasant to work in the light. And I mean, you can use subdued light when you're like coding or whatever, but you don't have to be in that like everything closed off dark room sort of thing. And especially with cyanotype, the chemistry is very easy to use and pleasant to work with. And it was just... no smell of fix, although Van Dyke, the fix isn't too bad, but
a little bit.
But no, it was just overall just using a UV box. And because one guy made a box and then another guy got inspired by that one and made his own. And then I had...
There was a third also, though. I think, wasn't Peter also working on the box?
Well, he said he had
box?
Problems, and so he was going to... start over, I think.
I'm sure he's going to get one.
And then one other student bought the same light I bought because Andre had showed us a picture from a workshop, this guy, Jim Fitzgerald, who does carbon printing workshops. Mm-hmm. And he had pictures of like a cheap $50 light you can buy on Amazon. You can just hang it over in a box. And people on YouTube just buy a cardboard box, put it on top, and boom. You can make these.
I mean, prints. There's very DIY aspects to working in these kind of with these all processes also. So
it's really good.
Yeah, I would say that if anything, you know, what would the most challenging aspect of the class was probably the software and that software workflow, because you know there's a checkbox here or there if you forget to check it or you do check it at the wrong time, everything's wrong. It's just like one of those little things. So and you know, many people just hit it because you're brand new to it, and you're gonna, especially when you're using a shared computer and people are turning stuff on and off because they're in different.
Well, we had a shared process. Printer, which was a big slowdown for the class too, because people had to line up and plug in to the printer and send their print and then you know go print.
But yeah, I mean, imagine having one enlarger for the color. Class. I mean, it's yeah. Yeah, you can. Yeah, challenging. Well, I you know, in any event, so a lot, you know, learned a lot. You know, certainly, whenever I do these classes, I have to up my own game. So there's a bunch that I, you know, learned myself out of the quarter. But yeah, it's always for me very satisfying seeing just people have fun and what's probably not surprise both of you. It's really important to me that people can make very high quality prints. And, you know, that was something that just an expectation I had. So, you know, I went out and bought, you know, special brushes just for the class because we didn't have the budget for it. And it, just that one thing made a big difference. Like,
I was printing at home and, I had bought chemistry from Bostick and Sullivan, which is where people buy it from, but I'd bought like brown cyanotype instead of green and it wasn't working. And I was like, what's happening? So Andre is like, well, bring it in and let's try it at PCNW. He's like, and use a good brush. Cause I was using some cheap $3 brush or whatever. And then I used a good brush at PCNW. I'm like, oh, it's working here. Mm-hmm. And it turned out that, you know, I went home and then I used a decent brush and I was like, oh, it's working. So things like that can affect the quality of what you're doing. So there's a guy named Kobayashi in Japan who makes these super high quality brushes. And since I was going over to Tokyo recently, I went to the place that's like the distributor for this guy. Like they get them from him. And they're really expensive if you buy them in the States. So I went to this place. It was an art gallery slash they sell stuff. And I went in, you know, they're like, what are you here for? And I'm like, I want the brushes. And so, you know, I see this art gallery. I'm like, where are the brushes? And they took me around the corner. And there's like a whole, you know, wall with a whole bunch of different brushes on it. So then they're like, oh, you should get this. You should get that or whatever. And it was really fun. It was also, you know, really inexpensive to buy them there. And they showed me washi paper. But it was, and it was fun and exciting that I was taking this class and I was able to go to this other country, connect with these people.
Yeah, that's cool.
And kind of, you know.
Did you bring one for Andre?
I just ordered some.
He'd already ordered some. Well, because I said, you can get them from the guy in Japan. So then the other people, instead of trying to buy them in the States, were ordering from that place. But I held off because I knew I was going over there.
Tariffs. Yeah. Yeah, Inkjet Mall here. Well, that's Inkjet the Cone Mall. Cone yeah. Editions people. They sell the Kobayashi brushes here, but they're always out of stock. So I just said, all right, I'll try to order it from the source. And, yeah. And they, believe it or not, I got the brushes faster ordering it from Japan than when I ordered it from the East Coast here in the past. Except, thanks to tariffs, yeah. I got a bill from UPS before my package arrived. It says, you have to pay whatever.
Yeah.
It's like...
Yeah, so I got a screaming deal getting out of Tokyo. Yeah, all I need to do is fly to Tokyo to go.
Well, congratulations, Andre.
Thanks.
Like it was a good class.
Yeah, it was a good class.
You were working on it for a while.
It was a lot of work, but I felt like, I mean, it was also exciting because there was people that, seemed like they were struggling at the beginning, but worked, pushed through it. And then at the end, everybody was showing prints, and they all, you know, it all seemed like everybody had kind of gotten.
I mean, it is really just something you have to do over and over again yourself. And so it's when you told me that you knew that some instructors were preparing a curve and then doing the printing, it's like, what's the purpose of taking the class then? Mm-hmm. You're just buying a print, basically.
Well, in a lot of cases, it's sometimes workshops are short. So a friend of mine did one on gum printing in the East Coast, and that's what they did, because you have 2 days, and you know, you want, a lot of times what they're expecting is they're going to learn how to coat, and they're going to learn the different, like say with gum printing, you might, you do tricolor maybe, so you're doing all these different layers of colors to get it. So, but yeah, I feel like if you can't make your own digital negative, then, I mean, to me, that's like the key, because it's like you have to have your own thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, in theory, you can make your own digital negatives by just downloading curves that are freely available on the internet. Yeah. But, you know, something, you know, you might have a certain paper that you're using or a certain variation of chemistry that doesn't align exactly with that general purpose profile. So you're just not going to get, again, to my point, a really high quality print that
or
way.
Or to be able to be expressive. Mm-hmm. Like yeah, what you were saying, like the computer doesn't know what your original negative looked like, but you do. Or you can have an idea of how you'd like it to be different than...
There was some cases where I had done the linearization and it still wasn't right. So I went into Capture One, which is my editor, and you know, I punched up the contrast or, you know, gave it a little more exposure or whatever. And I just printed again using that same curve, and then it was fine. So it was like my knowledge of, you know, knowing photography, knowing how to control those variables, I could do that. So I could work with the software and just tweak it into place so that my vision came out. Because the software, of course, can't know, you know, and they also, the software can't tell you what you expect. Like, for instance, everybody knows I love high contrast, right? So software doesn't know that. It's probably gonna generalize on like normal midtones or something like that.
So I have a number of ideas on how to improve the class for
get rid of silver.
what are the ideas?
So I was kind of adopting a pattern in the previous classes that were installed, where they you would learn this curve making process by going into the silver darkroom. So I'm just going to eliminate that whole thing. Hmm. There were a few people in class that appreciated learning the silver piece because they may want to do it. But most of the people there were, you know, they could already go into the silver darkroom and take their negatives. I think primarily everybody was mostly an analog photographer. They also shot digital, but primarily they were analog shooters. So they can already go to the darkroom and print. So going and making a cyanotype, well, they can't really make a cyanotype with a 35 millimeter negative. I mean, then if you contact print it, it's just a tiny little, you know, it's not, you can't do it. Mm-hmm. So they have to learn something new, and if they want to get into and explore some of these alternative photographic methods. So it's just like, if people are primarily taking the class to learn all process, let's just get rid of, you know, black and white completely, or the silver darkroom, and just go immediately to the all processes.
So then would you add another process, or would you just have a longer period of time for...
One thing you can do with cyanotype is that you can tone cyanotype with tea. Anything
botanicals. Mm-hmm.
And you can get over like vinegar, you can get an array of colors and tones and all kinds of stuff, and people do this all the time. But it's like, you could take cyanotype alone and do a lot with it to just try, and like to your point, Andre, shoot for the perfect print, the expressive print, different ways to make, you know, that print. So that was something I had thought of, that maybe if you focus on like one thing. But I do think a lot of people enjoyed I enjoyed Van Dyke.
Yeah,
I mean, so it is fun to kind of get into something different, and it feels similar, the curve making process is the same. Mm-hmm. Chemistry is slightly different.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that. I've made a concrete decision because kind of getting feedback from the class yesterday on it. But the two options are you learn three processes. Let's say cyanotype, Van Dyke, platinum palladium, or calotype, which is similar to platinum palladium. So you can do three processes, learn those three processes, or you just go deep in one, which to me would be cyanotype. And you start with just the basics, you learn how to make the curve, and then you just start exploring it. You try different papers. There are different variants of cyanotype chemistries. Chris was mentioning toning. You can make multi-colored, you know, prints as well.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, so you can really, take it in kind of different directions and be, you know, quite experimental too. I like the idea of being able to go deeper in one subject rather than just do some quick hops into, you know, three variants, because, you know, with any process, like, you know, when we were learning color printing, I mean, we were focused just on color printing, right? Color negative printing. Cibachrome isn't available now, but, you know, I don't think that that class would have been taught, you know, learn how to make color prints in the darkroom and Cibachrome prints in the darkroom. I mean, you probably would have had two different classes that you would take. So, you know, I would kind of prefer to have, you know, different courses, but, you know, to Chris's point, people really liked trying a different process and just see whether they liked it or not. So I don't know. I have to kind of noodle on that a little bit and see if is there a way I can, you know, give people some exposure to another process or two while going deeper in one or not. I don't know. We'll see.
And I think it's something to also point out how easy these processes are to do at home. Like, you know, you don't need much. So like with cyanotype, it's basically a tray with some citric acid and a tray with some hydrogen peroxide. That's all, you know, and try with some water. So you just basically in one, in the other, into the water, and you're done. But you know, having a UV box, you can do it in the sun. You can take people take them out in the sun. A lot of people get these $50 Amazon lights, put them in a cardboard box, and you're printing at home because so many people have inkjet printers that has now freed us to basically do this without having to deal with all the logistics of silver print. So I had kind of hammered my silver printing setup at home into place with a small enlarger in the bathroom. And so the silver thing, I was doing a lot of that. And then once I got to cyanotype, I was like, I am never doing silver again at home. It was so much more pleasurable, easy, just the not locking myself in the bathroom, all that sort of stuff was just made it feel more. Because the other thing is that I know I would do it more because I don't have to have that thing of like, okay, I got to move all this stuff in, then I got to close the doors, I got to put a blanket over this thing, you know, all that sort of stuff that you have to do. So I think, and it has, you know, like calotype, Van Dyke, platinum palladium offer you silver-like alternatives, I kind of feel, that you could utilize with that same sort of ease. Not that it's not a lot of work, and not that you weren't going to be iterating and probably cursing. I know I was a few times, but I think it's also satisfying because you feel more open about doing it. And I think that the psychological aspect of performing an act that we, you know, makes you want to do it as opposed to feeling like you have to do it.
Yeah, I mean, there is something to making your own paper, basically, your own paper emulsion. I remember when you were printing downstairs in the Jobo, and you kind of commented that's basically using a rotary processor to process the prints. You commented like, wow, I'm physically.
Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah, working with the, you know, yeah, I was doing it just recently and it was annoying me. I just really like working with a processor. But you know, there's a physical aspect, you know, to making it. And again, it's just like it was completely oblivious to me. You know, I wasn't really, well, I guess with the zone system, you are in effect making negatives a certain way.
Yeah.
But like with paper, I was, you know, just taking whatever the manufacturers gave. So it is kind of cool being able to control that aspect too.
Christina Anderson, who's kind of the, Andre introduced me to her Cyanotype book, who's kind of the guru of this process, has a spreadsheet of like all the different papers, because you can use all kinds of papers.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's done testing of all these papers. It's like this spreadsheet with like hundreds of rows of different kinds of papers you can buy. You know, you can go into Blick and just buy watercolor paper. And she would say which ones work with which processes best and whatever, like coating and stuff. So you can, that's, you know, you good. Can have lots of different surface types that you want. But people, you can Cyanotype on, like for me, as somebody who's done a lot of work with ceramics, I'm like, oh my God, I could, you know, I could Cyanotype on, say, unglazed but bisqued, you know, porcelain, which is exciting. You know, those ideas, you can do it on wood, you can do it on, people do it on t-shirts, blankets, whatever. So I think that that aspect of being able to kind of go wherever you feel is also kind of exciting.
I mean, that seems like what I like about that process when you've talked about it is that it does a little bit better of job of realizing the promise of how the computers could be a part of this process. Like in the beginning, it was like everything was about the printer, and then like taking, yeah, you have, you take with your digital camera, and then you like, you're trying to have a print that's like a darkroom print, but it's coming out of a printer. But this is different because now you're using a computer to basically, I mean, you can have any kind of image. And then you're figuring out how to create a negative that you can then, you know, use with any material. So this is like a nice way for a computer intervention that's just not straight, like a replacement of another process.
Right. Right.
Yeah, I think that, for instance, for my final, I took scans that my optician had made of my eyes, my dentist had done of my teeth, you know, like a heart thing, all this stuff. And I made those into negatives that I could print, you know, on Cyanotype. And that was really kind of cool and exciting to think that anything can be.
Should take them back to the doctor.
Yeah, exactly. Here you go, exactly. So it was kind of cool and exciting to think you can take anything and turn it into an image and work with that. And then I think that allows your mind to think, you know, further afield of what you could, you know, what you could do with the things that are around you. Explore the world in a different fashion than just a photographic image. So last year I made, for the first time, I worked on black and white inkjet prints. You know, I was shooting digitally, and I was kind of surprised. I made some really gorgeous prints with the help of a friend that I was really impressed with, where I was like, geez, I don't know if I want to do silver anymore because these are so good. And so I was excited about that work because it kind of got me jazzed. And then, you know, I did more printing over the year, but it was just, there's something about that process that lacks a little bit for me, that kind of tactile thing. So when I got into this class, you know, I was like, oh, this is it. You know, it's that tactile thing is really, like I said, psychologically important and was really exciting. And I'm not, it's not like I think inkjet printing is.
You can really just, you know, set it on anything.
Yeah, and I'm not going to give up inkjet printing or something, or just say like that's whatever, because I think that that's an expressive thing of its own. But it had a large impact on me psychologically as well as aesthetically, in terms of thinking about, I was writing, you know, I was on my trip to Japan, I was writing notes about things, you know, I would see, and I think like, oh, I can do this, oh, I can do that. And more so than just pointing the camera at something, I was thinking about images in my head more. So I thought it was interesting from that point of view.
Well, if we continue going through or doing a roundtable here on updates.
This one's just about you, Andre.
Yeah.
I was going to say we're going to hit our dinner.
Andre was I want to shout out that he was a patient. And the thing I thought was amazing with him as a teacher is not only the patient and spending a lot of time helping people outside of class on the weekends when people would be in there printing, was just that you worked hard to make things work. So we got through it because, in 10 weeks, everybody created Kurtz, went through three different processes, and made prints. Like, that is mind-boggling to me.
I mean, so. You really want to feel like you've been in a class. You pay good money, and you want to go in, and you want to learn, and you want to be with the people. That's what I remember about the best classes that I had, which is where we met, you know. But we were in there all the time working. And you feel like you're really getting into something, and you feel like you get your money's worth. And then out of that, you also come with a little bit of a practice. It's like, you know, training for a marathon or something. Like, you're kind of used to doing it, and so you can continue it. So it's really been great hearing you talk about putting this class together, because it has so much care in the way you're putting it together. And
and people were talking about continuing together as a group. Like, in the last class, cool. This woman was saying, like, oh, yeah, so we're going to be in 1 month.
Well, we know how long that lasts.
Exactly. But I just, like, you know, I don't always see that. So I was excited to see that was kind of like, you know, where the class felt like they were at the end.
Yeah, somewhat secondary thing. But one of the things I like to try to create an environment for is kind of a certain esprit de corps that happens within the group. Where the group just likes to be with each other, you know? And we had like a good, really nice spectrum of people. We had, Seattle University student all the way from there to, folks that I would refer to myself as an oldster. So like oldsters and, you know, and everything in between. Right. And that whole group all interacted with one another kind of equally.
And some people who have gone through the program, and some people that haven't really seemed like they've been engaging with photography in a long time and got excited about it again. So that was cool to see.
So did you have any kind of review or critique where people put up the prints they were making? And was it mainly focused on just, you know, how the print was working and going through their questions of how the print process was working? Or did you get into the, you know, the composition and the content and other aspects as well?
I didn't spend a lot of time, and I would say the students spent more time with compositional and conceptual critique than I did. I was primarily just trying to make sure everybody was successful making a negative and a print. But we did, once we got through the hurdles of the first roughly 4 weeks, I mean, it was a tough, you know, journey getting people's first kind of silver prints done. Once that happened, pretty much every week we would just have a critique period at the very beginning of the class, and whoever had prints that they were working on, whatever process they were working on, and wherever they were in their the workflow, you know, they just kind of put, you know, either prints up or step wedges or, you know, tests for coding or whatever. And so, you know, the class learns from other people as well, because there are unique problems that come up, and you might be hit by that unique problem next week or the week after or something like that, and you've heard about it and hopefully can correct it. So I like having a critique at the beginning of every single class. Just, there's work, always new work going up.
Yeah, I love that too. And did you also, I don't know how much you lectured, but did you also show photographs?
Yes, I did some. I showed, there were some slides, like at the beginning of class, first couple weeks, I was showing some samples of different alt processes. Later in the quarter, I also did.
And you sent out those YouTube videos and things.
Yeah.
For people to watch outside of class.
Yeah, there's a lot of kind of interesting photographers doing, you know, showing their work on YouTube, or they're just being covered as like a little documentary segment or something like that. So I collect those, and I just kind of have them in a little file on my computer. And so I just sent those out so people could, you know, some of it is just inspiration, seeing other professionals in many cases, or full-time artists, you know, making work. But also I didn't want to burn time in class with videos and lots of slides of work and stuff like that. I know like in our color class, we had many presentations that our color teacher Seth made, and I liked those a lot. I would have loved to have done those. I didn't feel like I had enough time in class to
be able. We ran out of time every class.
Almost every class.
Just trying to get through the technical.
Yeah.
Maybe if you ditch that silver room, then
there might be some more time.
You know, later when you've kind of pushed past just the technical aspects of going through the process, and there's time to show people other work that people are doing. I found that to be some of the most like personally instructive, just because you realize it's only by looking at other people's work that you realize how much you sort of think one way. And I just find that like, oh, I wouldn't have thought to do that way. Mm-hmm. And then it, you know, changes things.
Yeah, I think some of that comes about like when you go through, like, say we call this methods one, that maybe if there was a methods two where you, and that's what I was thinking of, is like, where do I go from here? Because there was a gum class coming up next, and tricolor gum, but I felt like I didn't have it in me right now to tackle a completely new format, because I feel like I need to get my head around this. But it would be cool if there was like a cyanotype 2 or something like that, where you could get more of the aesthetics of all process, because there's a lot of interesting photographers working, you know, always have been working in this field,
especially
and all the, you know, it's, you start digging into this stuff just to find out some of the technical stuff, and you see people doing all kinds of stuff out there. So it's
I remember that Seth, you know, actually had people give a presentation.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In retrospect, when did we have time to print?
Well, I recall we weren't printing often in class. I think it's like what he would do is he would, let's say, take half the class with some slides and some other material, and then maybe you might have half the class to go print. But I always remember there was hardly any time to print in class.
But that was after we'd had the kind of introductory printing class as well. So there was kind of color two, whatever they were calling it.
You're not really expecting, you want people to be able to achieve, you know, something in class. You're not expecting that they're coming in between classes necessarily, or doing the work necessarily. I mean, I guess they are, if they're doing it from home now, they're going home and doing some work.
Yeah. I feel as though the general consensus in the class is that there was an interest in something that happens next. Now, what exactly that is, you know, whether there is a few of the students in this class jumped into next quarter's gum class.
Are you teaching that?
No. I'm not a gum printer. not yet. I'll be taking a workshop in it later in June. But and in fact, at one time, because Chris was in it for a while until you decided just to step out, and I think Lindsay also was in it. So there would have been four people from an 8-person class going into that next one. So I think that there's interest in something that happens next, but I don't think this is something I've been discussing with Eric Johnson, the program chair, on what should be the linked classes. And you know, it's just still kind of an ongoing conversation.
The gum, good idea. The gum class seemed focused more on like, here's a curve, I'll teach you how to make gum, and gum is fairly complex, so I understand that a little bit, but I didn't feel like that jumping into another technical thing. You know, it's kind of like I'm barely got this under my belt, so I felt like I could iterate on this for a long time. But it would be nice if there was like some secondary class that would be more like a continuation. You know how you go from like they had the advanced silver printing classes taught by Jonavi back in the day, so that you could focus just on printing and things like that, where you could you know, dig in deeper. Some assess class were kind of like that. They were just like continuing color. And you'd get that partial thing of like printing, but also inspirational lectures that show you.
Working on your expressivity.
Yeah.
Once you get past the, technical proficiency.
The classes that, and workshops that I've been teaching have been very technically focused. And, you know, since I am a technically kind of oriented photographer type, I don't mind, you know, doing that. But I actually am more kind of personally interested in seeing people be able to make innovative work that they're kind of excited about. Because I find in photography is it's like there's so much of the technical and the apparatus, and there's the tools that we need to make the work, and it's like shiny objects. It's like, ooh, large format or 8x10 or, you know, medium format digital, or I want to do it all, you know. And
speak for yourself.
Well, yeah. It's a real problem. And as I have struggled with some of that myself and being able to move forward on making work that I'm excited about, I feel as though I'm making a little bit of progress in that. But I would prefer to see students focused more on making work and less on the technical piece. And so everybody finished this class and now they know they've got a pretty good grounding of the technical pieces of this all process world. But how does that translate into a project where they're going to go out, you know, kind of Chris created a little conceptual body of work using this so he could kind of test out the waters and kind of make something that felt more connected to the process. You know, many others in the class were just kind of doing test prints because they just want to see it and understand how to do it. I want people making the work that resonates with them with whatever tools or process that they're learning. And it's really hard to find time. You know, it's just like now they know the process. I would love now to spend like 10 weeks just working on a conceptual body of work.
Oh,
that they're using that.
Yeah.
Just propose process, it.
You know? Yeah. And there, to your earlier question on what were the critiques like, then, you know, I mean.
Then you could have real critique.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's exactly. The thing is, I felt like I'd like to mess around with Sanotype and Van Dyke more, and then maybe say the 4 week or something, I commit to a process, and then I make a body of work. I think that would be really exciting.
Yeah. So that's why I was thinking of kind of the next year version. Maybe it would just be one process. And then, you know, for the final project, I would, you know, give some time, but also, you know, tell the class, you're going to go out and shoot. Because people were primarily just using images from their own archive. And I know for myself, I kind of, for old images I shot, you know, I might use some favorites or something like that, but it's, you're not making anything new. You're just kind of testing. And I feel as though without the project making piece of like a photography class, there's just, to me, it's just a hole. Despite how kind of technically minded I am about that stuff, I would prefer to see the students focusing on making work, not just making a perfect print or whatever.
Yeah, so. And thinking about it from beginning to end, like you've got to figure out, you know, what your the origin, what you're going to work with, and turn it into a print and make those things match up.
Mm-hmm.
I was glad that I found out that the medical community will give you data that you need very quickly. Because it was kind of like the idea was coming forth, and I'm like, hey, calling my dentist, calling Optum, hey. I got a final in 2 weeks. I got to get those files.
Okay.
Okay.
Shall we have dinner?
Let's go do it. All right, we're signing off.
Thanks, everybody.
See you soon.